Somehow he returned. We make fun of it. Everyone makes fun of it. Of course he returned. We are seeing the somehow, and it's starting to make more sense. I'll say it right now. This is making me like the sequel trilogy more, and it's all filling in the gaps, and it's all making it one cohesive story. The more complete it is, the better it will be. Everyone, one and all, to Krypton to Alderaan. I am Joey, your Star Wars lover, and with me is Royish. Good looks.
Hello, podcast. Hello, Joey.
Hello. You might have heard of him, Royish. Good looks. Hello from the dark side. Is this any of this ringing a bell? And we're the podcast that analyzes nerdy pop culture, but it's mostly Star Wars. And this episode, guess what? It'll be Star Wars. Guess what else? I've done this bit already. It'll be The Bad Batch Season 3, Episodes 10 and 11, Identity Crisis and Point of No Return, respectively. But first, we have had tremendous growth. Thank you again to everyone. We've had so many new people subscribe to this channel on YouTube. It's been really amazing to see. Let's keep it up. Let's keep the momentum going. We really enjoy making this show, and it's really cool to see. So do us a favor, hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Tell your friends. And I'm just going to put this out there. I'm going to create a new milestone for us. Last time I said, let's get to 1,000 subscribers. That would be dope. That would be amazing. Incredible. I'm going to put out a different milestone. I'm going to manifest it. I'm putting it out into the YouTube ether. Let's see if we can get 5,000 views on this episode.
Whoa.
On YouTube.
Whoa.
Hey, I am manifesting it. Share it around, everybody. Let's see if we can get there. The more people share it, the more the YouTube algorithm will help us out with it. So let's take advantage of the algorithm and see if we can get this episode to 5,000 views.
I love it. We've only done it once, but hey, you know, one time I hit 1,000,000 views. I didn't know if I could do it again. And it's possible.
And you never looked back.
Yeah.
Everyone, listen to the Royish Good Looks podcast as well to hear all about Royce's journey through Star Wars parody music making.
Forget 5,000 views. Let's surpass Royish Good Looks. Let's take that guy down. Let's get some like a T-Series and PewDiePie competition going on here.
Wow. That would be such a funny, my head is swimming now with the idea of this bit where you exist on both forms of content, your own thing in Krypton to Alderaan, but we're feuding with Royish Good Looks, the identity. I love that.
Don't look up to your heroes. Surpass them.
Be your heroes. But then also never meet your heroes.
Crush your heroes in one fell swoop.
Yep.
This is good stuff.
Help us out. I'm enjoying it. You know what? All that caffeine, it's working out. So let's do it. Let's get there. Thank you everyone so much. And let's punch it. Wow. Okay. So we'll start with Identity Crisis because that makes the most sense. We are back in the dark. Over the course of these two episodes, we only come out of the dark a little bit, but guess what? It still feels dark. I don't know if I felt good at any point in time watching these two episodes. They really brought us down a peg from a couple of things we've been seeing this season. Like we were talking about like the last episode, last couple of episodes, we're actually like having fun. This, right out of the gate, darkness, melancholy tones, not fun. I also think we or someone should make a supercut of every opening scene of The Bad Batch. Because it's beautiful every time. It's just an amazing cinematic shot every single opening scene.
I would also love to watch that because I love the fade in. I think episode 10 faded in. Episode 11 was like, boom. It was a Rogue One kind of jolt out of your seat, surprise, jump scare sort of moment. But yeah, dude, I think we were training in episode 9, The Harbinger. We were meditating. We were having some target practice. I guess that was maybe the episode even before that. But we were kind of like preparing for this moment, for better or worse. Well, actually, I guess I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Not necessarily an identity crisis, but maybe metaphorically the show was preparing us for what was about to pop off in these episodes. So dark, man. My top note is Identity Crisis. Like, not so much a Bad Batch episode, so much as it was either a Mandalorian side quest or one of the all of the Andor episodes are great. I was going to say one of the best Andor episodes. Andor, period, in its intensity, in its I'm captivated this entire time. Oh my gosh. Every character on the screen. I don't want to be in that position. I would hate to be in that position. The doctor or the kids. It's just awful. It's heavy, man.
Yeah. Cue Marty McFly, Jif. Yeah, I mean, very Andorian, but instead of adults in prison, it's kids in prison. This is a dark and heavy show. I think overall, on average, these two episodes in particular, very dark and heavy. But yeah, Identity Crisis, we're seeing the kids, the high M count kids, the potential Jedis, you know, what the Jedi Order would have brought in. Some people talk a lot about how, like, the Jedi are no better. They abduct kids and, like, take them away from their families. The Jedi would have given these kids a life and made them, like, heroes of the galaxy. Here they are, imprisoned, thinking that they might get to go home, right? That's another huge, hugely heartbreaking aspect to this is, like, Jax, the kid who tries to escape, is like, I just want to go home. Eve or Eva is like, Nala Say said she would figure out when I get to go, right? Like, they think they're getting out of this. And we know they're not. And Emery knows they're not. Yeah, like, the prisoners in Andor, but kids. Oh, just so, so much. And so Identity Crisis actually opens on the, I don't know if it's named, the other planet, where we see the little baby with, like, force abilities, right? And the person who eventually, like, calls the Empire to be like, you got to come get this kid. Because the Empire has, maybe this existed pre-Empire, the idea here that an evil government, like, monetizes this hate to the point where, like, this person calls in a bounty hunter to turn in a little kid for money. That is the deepest, darkest idea that has potentially ever existed in, like, a Disney cartoon ever.
Hey, man, that's Cad Bane's, like, profession as well, though. He's also doing really shady stuff for money. Both of those people are, like, they're just trying to make their way in the galaxy.
Well, yeah, and that goes back to having an evil government monetizing hate. Like, this is what happens. It's eventually what creates prejudice, right? Like, those people at the farmer's market there in the opening scene are like, shh, don't say stuff like that. You can't, like, they're worried about it. And then the guy calls Cad Bane. Cad Bane's in it for the money. Like, a lot like I was saying about Fennec a couple episodes ago, just trying to make his way in the galaxy. And he does some stuff where, like, he obviously doesn't respect the person who called in the tip because he throws the money at him. And then a little bit later, he's like, he says something to Emery when Emery shows up for the kid. She's like, where did this child come from? Or subject, whatever. And he says, asking questions like that, you're giving away more than you think. At that point, none of the troopers were paying attention. They were, like, handing the money over to Toto. So that to me is like, you better not let them hear you say that or you're going to be in trouble. Right? Like, he still has this kind of ethics code. I think he's a little bit more evil than Fennec, generally, but he still has, like, this code of ethics where he's not exactly terrible. But the Empire, this evil government, is facilitating this terribleness in everyday citizens. It's a lot like, I equated it to X-Men. It's building this prejudice, like the government is building this prejudice into the everyday people out there in the world. To the point where, like, parents are going to not want their kids to be force sensitive because of the heat that it brings and the danger of it all and all of that stuff. So it's very interesting and it's very deep and dark to see Star Wars and a Star Wars cartoon setting up this idea of, like, creating prejudice in the galaxy.
Yeah, I don't like it one bit. I feel bad for all these kids. And the mother, she's going to wake up from that stun gun and be like, where's my baby? And, like, somebody took my, she has no clue. She maybe knew the baby had powers, right? But that's awful. We don't catch up with her afterwards. But, like, just thinking about that, heartbreak number one in this episode of many, then seeing all the children on Tantus, I was getting so many X-Men vibes of, like, X2 where they're capturing, you know, everybody, and Stryker is using one as, like, his bodyguard, right? So I was getting kind of vibes of that too. Like, even if they're not using them to test the blood, like, maybe they turn them into assassins, just like the clones, and you've got your Jedi assassin, your inquisitors, whatever. Like, so that just doesn't feel good that they're there. But I also have hope, just like with the X-Men, it's like, you can't keep me down. Like, I've got powers, you don't. And it's not that I, especially with X-Men 97 now and Magneto being like, hey, we could work together, even though I could crush you. Like, we could be on the same team. And I get that. But I think about that with these kids where it's like, it's not necessarily that, like, they want to, like, kill their captors or their oppressors. It's like, they just want to go home. They just want to be themselves. And like you said, with prejudice, that's just it. Can't we all get along, even though I have these amazing abilities and you don't? Which, by the way, anybody can tap into if you just could center yourself for a moment and not be a jerk, but you're being a jerk, all right? Don't be jealous.
Don't be jealous. Just don't be a jerk. New merch coming from Krypton to Alderaan. Yeah, you know, I think this is setting up the true evilness of the Empire, but also the true evilness of Palpatine. When the first episodes of this season came out of The Bad Batch, I had done, I think that was my solo episode, and I was talking about how this isn't silly boy Palpatine. This is not like jumping around lightsaber fights like he did in the prequels and in the Clone Wars TV show where he's like standing over a cauldron using Sith magic. There's no silliness here. It's just, he's got his hood up. He's monotone. It's dark and sinister. Sinister is the word. Hey, X-Men, Mr. Sinister. One of the other greatest villains ever made. So they share that tone. And this show is pointing out the true evilness of Palpatine. He's abducting children. He's always been like abducting children for these experiments. But now, like, to what end? They need the M-Count kids so that he can clone himself? Is this the reason why he's always been doing this? Is this the reason why he brings the Inquisitors or starts the Inquisitorius? Because even though Vader is like, no, come on, I'm all you need. And Palpatine's like, nah, we're going to train these Inquisitors. Is he keeping them around because he keeps these Force-sensitive people around in order to continue these experiments? This is what my mind started swimming with in this episode. I love those ties to the existing lore. Like, I feel like with these episodes, we very rarely talk about like the saga that exists outside of the barriers of this series, but tying it in this way to the true evilness of this person who like convinced the galaxy to turn itself over to him and now is just experimenting on kids and funding this and like no questions asked, all the resources you need. Tarkin's like, where's all this money going? And Hemlock is like, that's classified. Like, Hemlock is above Tarkin there. It's like, you don't need to know. All I need are the funds. Like, and Tarkin's got his, like, wants his greedy little mitts and everything. I hate that guy. Also, this really amplified my hate of Tarkin. Like, you just want to be in charge of everything, you greedy little.
Let the hate flow through on this episode, Joey. I'm with you. My note was like, this is why it's him all along pulling the strings. And yep. I hate him for this. Like, yep. He is the one making this happen to these children, right? There's no other reason other than his selfish desire for him to be in control and him to continue being the master of puppets behind the scenes. And it's what Palpatine does best. And it's also the thing that we like kind of don't like about him, because he always is sort of in the shadows in some of the movies. But then behind the scenes, that's, you know, we weren't privy to this. And now we're filling in this backstory in the Bad Batch series, which is so cool when you think about it. We'd love to beat up on Boba Fett, maybe filling in some of his. I guess we didn't get backstory in the Book of Boba Fett, but filling in more of his story doesn't maybe necessarily flesh the character out the way you like. But sometimes it really does. And this is making me, I don't like Palpatine as his character, but I love the story building that they're doing with him, where he's not just this like evil wizard guy at the end of Jedi, Return of the Jedi, you know, that just kind of pops in. It's like, well, he was in command, you know, it's no different than Snoke in the sequels, or even again, when Palpatine somehow returns, you're like, well, that's kind of lame, but it's like he returns because of all this crazy stuff. Right. So I love that they're building that in, but I hate Palpatine for it.
Somehow he returned. We make fun of it. Everyone makes fun of it. Somehow he returned. Of course he returned. Like, look at this. Look at all of the pieces that we are setting up here to ensure through this, through Mando, to ensure that he returns. This makes all of that, stuff like this makes all of that make more sense to me. We're putting the pieces of the puzzle together. I've said this before. I really hope we get to the day where like we can stop using that meme and we can stop hating on Rise of Skywalker. It's not my favorite thing, but this is making me appreciate it so much more. Like, somehow he returned. Of course, somehow he returned. We are seeing the somehow, and it's starting to make more sense. And I'm getting really ramped up here, but this storytelling I love. And I've said it before about the Clone Wars TV show. The Clone Wars TV show elevated the prequel trilogy for me. My love for the prequels is built on a base of my love for the Clone Wars animated show. And this is doing that for the sequel trilogy for me. I'll say it right now. This right here is making me like the sequel trilogy more, which is what all of this stuff should do. This is all within the saga, and it's all filling in the gaps and it's all making it one cohesive story. If something like this can make the sequel trilogy better, then that's what it's all about. We should not, it's what I want to happen because I want to really like The Rise of Skywalker, but it's working. Do you think that it is or has the potential to make you like the sequel trilogy more than you already do?
So I didn't realize this till just now. I was going to say, like, wait a minute, but then is this a retconning of that Goofy shoehorning him in? This is just like when we grade our side quest episodes or not. Like, is it a side quest or does it build character? I don't know. They didn't really further the plot that much, though. There was a monster and there was a monster last week. And it's, is it a retcon or not? Or is it just how you tell an excellent story? Because, of course, this is the J.J. Abrams mystery box. Every single thing in a J.J. Abrams series is a, air quotes here, is a retcon. But that's how you write stuff. You do demo one and then you revise it for demo two. And eventually you get a mix that winds up on your YouTube channel. And then you realize that you left shower in the background and you get that comment for the last 7 years in a row. Thanks. I got the notice, YouTube. So it might not be a retcon. It just might be the way that you tell an awesome story. And this is why Star Wars is with us after generation after generation. It might just be the greatest story of all modern media. Media, period.
You heard it here. The greatest story of all time, Star Wars. This is always how Star Wars has worked. It's always been sequel, prequel stuff. They've told a story and then they've gone back in time to tell another story. And that's exactly what's happening here. I wouldn't call it a retcon. They haven't specifically changed anything, but we're developing more of an understanding of how he returned.
Yes, because you have, at the very beginning of any journey, you have the least amount of information you will ever have. And by the end of the journey, you have a lot more information. And that's also part of this storytelling. But like you said, we jump back and forth through the timeline, right? Hey, maybe I got to give Boba Fett another chance. Maybe that is also part of the beauty there.
Ah, that's a stretch.
I don't know. But dude, I love the parallel here with the side, like retcon or side quest. We said there's no such thing as a side quest. It's all serving the story. There's no such thing as a retcon. It's all serving a story. Bro, you're watching the show to be told a story. I love it. And I do not like some of the plot lines in the sequel trilogies as much as some of the other Star Wars plot lines. But like you said, the more and more I'm watching this Bad Batch stuff, the more it's giving gravitas to what happens in those films. It's all tying together. It's becoming more and more beautiful. And to answer your question from 10 minutes ago, yes.
I mean, just imagine sitting down to watch all of this stuff in chronological order, right? That's the biggest thing.
Dude, it's the machete order thing or whatever. You know, it's like, whoa, okay.
It will make the story so much, the more complete it is, the better it will be. That is also to say that this story is very, very good on its own. If you haven't guessed that we're really enjoying The Bad Batch, if that sentiment has not come across as of yet, these independently extremely good stories are fitting all together, just makes the whole so much better.
Dude, and I still love The Bad Batch group, but somehow they've told a beautiful story about Omega, this person that's just full of all this positivity and light and her role in the galaxy, and somehow connected it to the most evil person in the galaxy. Those polar opposites. Well done.
And she's the key. They're opposites. They're, like you said, they're polar opposites. And that she's the key to Project Necromancer working, the one thing he needs so that he somehow returns later. That is, it's the dark side, light side. It's what Star Wars is all about. Except it's Palpatine once again using the light side to complete his plans. Just like he did with the Jedi in the prequels. Just like he's always done, he uses the light side to fuel the dark side. And that's what we're getting here. He needs Omega, the epitome of lightness and hope, to commit the most evil act in the galaxy. We have been talking about Omega being this force for good in the galaxy and Omega being kind of the what's fueling other people's redemptions and stuff. Now we see that with Emery. This episode was called Identity Crisis, and it's all about Emery coming to terms with what's going on. And I don't believe that her eyes would have been opened or her heart would have been open to any of this stuff without Omega. She keeps that doll, man. She keeps that doll for a reason. Like, Nala Se loved Omega. Now Emery has taken Nala Se's place in both ways, in charge of the science and in like loving Omega. And Omega fueled Emery's redemption. Omega is also being the source of hope now for Eve, because Eve gets that doll and it's comforting. And Omega is even like influencing these people, giving hope and goodness to these people out in the world who don't even know who she is, because she has influenced others. And so that, like Omega being at the center of all of that and everything like that spreading out from her in a web, is also fantastic and the exact opposite of Palpatine, and also how we started this episode with this evil government that manifests and monetizes hate. I really don't want to see anything bad happen to her.
To Eve or...
Either. Man, those little kids. Oh my God. What a heartbreaking episode, y'all. It's just so rough.
Right. Even this Eva character, like, is asking about the green... I don't remember any of their names. Yeah. Him being in solitary and being like, I was going to see him today, right? And you said nothing bad was going to happen. You're like, oh, like, what a sweet kid. Like, and now they've captured a baby, right? And that really amplifies it for Emery at the end, that she's like, this is a little too far. You even think about like Grogu, you know, it's the same thing. You're like, this child, like, what are you doing here? It's just, it's already too far to take any person against their will, but a child, a baby, it's just, what are we doing here? And again, all for, you know, Palpatine's, for his selfish desires. But I love this connection with Omega as well. A little piece of her, Emery kept it, but you know, a piece of her remained there. And obviously that shows that Emery has got some goodness within her as well. And she's passing it on to this other child. And of course that Omega eventually surrenders and maybe will make her way back onto Tantus, and all of those things will converge. Like, oh, that's my doll. Like, and maybe like the Eva will want to give it back to Omega, but Omega will say, no, that's yours now. You keep it, sort of thing. Like, I'm putting this in my headcanon. If that happens, that'll be amazing. But regardless, like, I love that. She doesn't even know this person, but through Emery, has made a connection with her. I love that back on Pabu, she's leaving text glasses behind. She's leaving her actual doll behind there, you know, saying like, I just want people to know that we were here. And that's also a nice nod to Tech. I don't know if you're picking this up, but like when Tech's journey last season was like kind of cataloging all these indigenous tribes and people and learning about people. And then, you know, Omega's now kind of, I don't know. I liked kind of the tie in there of that with Tech. It wasn't just his goggles. It was like his whole story. And the Bad Batch connecting with everybody out there in the world.
He's part of it now. He's part of that chronicling of all of that culture.
Well, because he had said something like, oh, they're just separatists. And he's like, no, we're like a village of people, you know? And that's what these episodes here really pointed on. Like, even as Omega is surrendering, she's looking around at the town and she's like, no, I've brought so much like destruction and devastation to this purely beautiful place, which we have to talk about. You know, the elephant in the room of Pabu now no longer being this hidden paradise that we can retire to. But, you know, she sees the downfall of that and how she's kind of maybe brought that onto them. And that's so sad as well, because there's supposed to be a museum there, like uniting kind of cultures, you know. And here the Empire is kind of putting their boot down on top of it. It's so sad. But I do like that the assassin burns Omega a little bit when she's surrendering from the storytelling aspect. Because I was thinking how irresponsible it is for the Batch to be bringing such, like, they brought the chaos there, knowingly or not, that they are the root cause of that. She says, these people are innocent, you know, don't hurt them. The assassin says, you should have never come here in the first place then. And it's like, oh, he's right. It hurts, but he's right. And so Omega takes that to heart and she's going to sacrifice for the greater good. This is also beautiful. Man, this show's phenomenal.
Yep. It is phenomenal. And I really, really like that the parallel there with the Lula dolls. Like Omega giving it up in the Archeum, which for anyone who doesn't remember, it is the culmination of all of the cultures of the refugees on Pabu. Pabu is a refugee community. And that the Archeum is a museum of all of that culture, all of those different cultures. And I'm so relieved that we did not see the Empire destroy the Archeum, because that would have been horrible. Like we're talking about how horrible these two episodes were, not in a like storytelling way, but in a like gut-wrenching, heartbreaking, dark way. And that would have been terrible. And making Tech part of that is something that I did not think of when I saw those glasses go in there, but is also very beautiful. He was the one who chronicled all of that data, and now he's part of it. And that's amazing. But yeah, God, it's so hard to say that I see it from your point of view with that, with thinking it was irresponsible of them because I just wanted them to be happy there. And they thought they were safe until Ventress showed up. They seem to be taking Ventress's advice with leaving. She's like, you're not as safe here as you think. And they're kind of like, oh crap, I guess maybe we should go. And then it lights a fire under them and they're getting ready to go. And they're like saying their goodbyes and stuff. But I do, oh man, yes, maybe if they went and hid away on Octo, it would be different and no one would have been in danger besides those frog people. But having this seemingly safe space with a community that we wanted them to be able to like have a happily ever after, that it was completely destroyed this episode. The idea of that, I think, is completely gone, which is something that I've talked about, like really wanting ad nauseum, probably them to retire on Pabu. Well, the Empire knows it now and the Empire is literally burning the place down.
But there's still some ambiguity because when she's talking to Liana in the museum, she's like, we'll keep all these relics safe for you for when you come back because you're going to come back, right? And they're playing Omega's theme in the background there. And I don't know thematically what that cue is supposed to mean, but it wasn't the blah, you know, it wasn't dead silent. It was her happy. Na, 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 na. And I'm like, okay, maybe she will come back. And maybe that won't mean the end, you know, for Pabu either.
Right. We can pull into Speculation Station a little bit here that maybe she'll pull a Dooku and erase Pabu from the archives on Tantus or whatever, which I think would be an amazing parallel to see. I would actually really love that. So that would be, now I'm all for that. But as of now, they're destroying the place. The Emperor also like loves finding Jedi temples and destroying them and destroying all the artifacts or taking the Jedi artifacts. So the Empire, Palpatine, an evil government who also just happens to be xenophobic. No aliens are allowed in the military besides Thrawn. Thrawn is the only one that exemption's been made for. An organization like that is very anti-culture. They want every, you know, it's very prejudice and it's very anti-culture. And so the idea that they would destroy that place, would destroy the Archaeum, would destroy all of that individuality there is not outside of the realm of possibility. I hope it doesn't happen. We might see that before this is done and it would be heartbreaking, but maybe we won't and she'll be able to go back there at the end and there will still be that museum to go back to. It's really hard to pick up on if that's foreshadowing or not because it just seems so dark and dire right now. It seems like there's no chance for that. I mean, they've removed hope from me for the rest of the, I mean, like they did a very good job of like killing the hope that I had for them having a happily ever after here.
Well, I would be surprised if we don't return to some more stories on Pabu, because I could see maybe the clone cadets staying there of being like, we'll stay behind and like we'll do our best to protect this place. Like I kind of like that they incorporated them finally into the plot line a little bit in this episode. So there's still 5 episodes left. I could see us bouncing back and forth on occasion, but it's like Omega said, like the bigger mission is freeing our captured brothers. And when she finds out that there's other high M count individuals also being held there and maybe reconnecting with Emery and Nala Se, she's going to want to break them out too. We were saying this last week of like, is she going to find other Jedi in the galaxy? Well, no, we didn't even think about them having other M count Jedi, or, you know, at Tantus. Like it's kind of funny that maybe other smarter, more deep Canada-file podcasters went there, but we didn't go there. You know,
we did not.
We were thinking about the path and the people out in the galaxy. But what about the people that Palpatine had all along? Dude. So that's where her mind is at. It's not like, let's save Pabu. Like, it's unfortunate what's happening here. But we've got to like focus on the main mission, like she tells Crosshair. And even Crosshair's like, I don't like this. We should save ourselves. But no, that's not what we're here to do. We don't leave our own behind.
Yeah. He wants to save her. I mean, he's just turned around so much. And with her saying, focus on the bigger mission, Crosshair, I'm just a small part of it. Such an emotional scene. And so much of her being the leader that we've been talking about her being. It's no accident that her and Crosshair were the ones who ended up together at the end of this episode, because he has been following her lead since they broke out of Tantus. She is his superior officer. And she is more and more a soldier. We've talked about like Hunter saying to the cadets, be more than a soldier. In this moment, Omega is for lack of a better word, logical. She's like, this is the only way. They know we're here. They're here for me. They're not going to stop. There's a bigger mission here. And also, by the way, it's my choice. And when she delivered that line, that is like what sent chills all over me. She has this bigger mission in mind. She's completely selfless. That's it. She's just completely and utterly selfless and maybe has hope that things will work out, but she's handing herself over to the Empire. And she knows that at least a little bit that they might not be able to track her there. So it's just, again, Omega being the best person in the galaxy, but in that moment also like Crosshair taking her orders, which shows the level of respect that he has gained for her to the degree that he is going to let her be captured by the Empire.
Yeah, she's incredibly mature for her age. Like, it's incredible that she's developed that way, and it's great. She gets captured and she's meditating. She's just like, they're focusing on the mission, knowing she's going to the most remote. Like you said, they don't know if they can find her. She doesn't know that Crosshair missed the shot. She's hoping for the best. But either way, it's funny because she was already in the prison and she broke out. So she's obviously thinking like, I did it once, I could do it again. I love how cool she's keeping herself, because that's such a, any of us in that position would have been the, I'm going to hide in the bushes. You know, I'm going to make a run for it. I'm, you know, save myself sort of thing. Like the fight or flight response. She's not fighting or flighting. She's literally just like, all right, what do we need to do? This is what's important. And that's such a quality of a great leader. It's going to be great in this ending. I don't want to have my heart broken any further. The storytelling's been great, so I'm sure it'll be enjoyable on that level. But I would love to see her continuing this leadership role, continuing to inspire people and like hold the ship together, you know?
Think of how far she's come. She never left Kamino. It's only been a few years and she's gotten to see the galaxy, and think of how far she's come. And now she is this leader who's doing everything for the greater good. She's sacrificing herself for the people of Pabu. She's sacrificing herself for her brothers. She's sacrificing herself for the other clones on Tantus. And it's incredible to see her journey, and it's not over yet.
I'm with you, and I'm excited that there's still 5 episodes to wrangle this in. This isn't the last cliffhanger, and then we have 20 more minutes to wrap it up. I was joking with you off air about Din being captured at the end of season 3 Mando, and then they free him 2 minutes later. We've got 5 episodes left that Omega and Eva and Green Guy,
Jax
and Emery could all take down Tantus from the inside. Let's live there, man. Let's not do this on 2x speed.
I just thought of something incredible. What if Omega teaches the kids there how to use, like, how to connect with the Force?
Oh, yes.
Choo-choo speculation station, but that would be incredible. She's learned from Gunji, she's learned from Ventress, and now she's taking it to these kids. Wow, okay, I could talk for 20 more minutes about that, but I'm not going to.
Yes, yet. I love this. We get the Ahsoka moment. Sabine, everybody, kick in, you know?
Like,
I'm on board, dude. I think we're going to be in for a really enjoyable end of the season. Like, it's ramping up. So I don't see us taking a side quest next week. I'll be here for it either way.
Yep.
But listeners, we got to keep this conversation going. We would love to hear from you. So leave your comments here on YouTube. Hit us up wherever you like to social media. Hey, share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. Hit subscribe. Tune in next week for more nerdy pop culture, but mostly Star Wars and the Bad Batch. Thank you for listening to the show today. I've been Royce.
I've been Jax. Oh.
And we've been
Krypton 2.
All
Mount Tantus, unfortunately, we're going back.